Welcome to the Fit Strong Women Over 50 podcast, episode number 160. Hi, I'm Jill. Thank you for joining us today.
And I'm Chris. Jill and I are your hosts for this podcast and the founders of the Becoming Ellie community.
In case you're wondering, we decided to name our community Becoming Ellie because Ellie was the Norse goddess of aging who beat Thor in a wrestling match. Chris and I thought, hey, we want to be like Ellie.
You can find out more about the Becoming Ellie community and this podcast at our website, becomingellie.com. Ellie is spelled E-L-L-I. Be sure to sign up for our newsletter while you're there. That way you'll know about new episodes and anything else that's new with us.
Hey, we have a shout out today from Horse Crazy Mom from Instagram. She said, I always listen to the podcast. It's been over 3 years now. Love the information and hearing that it's never too late. I need to just be more consistent with myself and I'd be good. LOL.
Horse Crazy Mom, I think a lot of us feel like consistency would really help. I know I do.
Yes, indeed.
Today, we're talking with Bree Lambert. She's an amazing endurance athlete who runs ultramarathons.
Bree Lambert is a personal trainer, running coach, nutritionist, and ultra runner. She has been pursuing endurance sports since her teenage years, starting with road triathlon, Xterra off-road triathlon, and now ultra running.
Bree completed her first 50K in 2005, and since then has completed distances from 50K to 100 miles. Each finish represents hundreds of hours of training, dedication, and mental preparation.
Bree coaches other runners to achieve their goals while providing personal training services to both runners and non-runners alike in San Jose, California, and online. She believes in a healthy lifestyle and thinks that no matter where your health is now, you can make an improvement.
She's committed to her family and loves to cook and spend time with close friends. Welcome, Bree. We are so happy to talk to you today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be a part of this podcast. I'm excited. Very nice to meet you both.
Nice to meet you. And thank you so much for being here. Okay, so let's just start with not all of our listeners are runners. Some of them are, but not all of them. So let's just maybe start with a little background. We know what a 5K is and a 10K, and I think most everyone knows at least what a marathon is. But can you describe what makes a race an ultra race?
So an ultra is defined as a distance or a foot race that is greater than a marathon. So if it's more than 26.2 miles, then that's an ultra.
So if I put on a race that's 28 miles, it's an ultra.
Correct. Yes, that is right. In fact, the Quad Dipsy, which is in Marin County. So I live in the South Bay area. And so just over the San Francisco Bridge in Marin County, there's the Quad Dipsy. And that's a 28-mile run, trail run.
Oh.
So that's considered an ultra.
Okay. But so is the 100-mile.
Correct.
But ultra runs don't have to be a trail run. They could be a road race too, right?
Exactly. Yes.
So do you train differently for these different lengths of races and different types of races? Or do you just do more of everything?
With ultra running, time on feet becomes really important. And especially the distance that you're preparing for. So for example, a 50K is just more than a marathon, a little more than a marathon. It's 5 miles more. So you're not going to get a lot of, you don't need to train differently, I guess is a better way to say it. You know, in terms of like your preparation for a marathon would be very, very similar to a 50K. But when you jump up from there and you are preparing for a 50-mile race, 100K or 100, that's when the time on feet and the consideration of nutrition changes. And then you also have to think about the event that you're training for. So for example, if you're preparing for a mountain 50, that's going to look different than if you were training for a road 50. So, or even a 100-mile, you know, road run versus a 100-mile mountain run. And so you really have to take into consideration the terrain that you're going to be racing on. You have to consider, you know, the nutrition component, and you need to bring those pieces together in order to really prepare yourself.
And so you do both run the road and trail. Which do you prefer and why?
So for road, I've run Boston 3 times. I ran Boston Marathon for the 3rd time this year. And so when I'm running a road marathon, so let me just tell you, I focus on road running for the marathon distance. And I also integrate road running just to mix things up, because I think it is beneficial if you're running ultras to spend some time off the trails, just so that you can get some different just different training. You know, you get the turnover when you're running road. So basically, if I'm training for a marathon, I'm going to spend more time on the road. If I'm training for an ultra, a mountain run, then I'm going to be spending more time on the trails in the mountains, and I'll just integrate some road running just to keep my legs snappy. Because I really try to compete at my best when I run these races. I like to compete. And so I just, you know I'm 56 years old, but I just can't not show up at any race and give my best effort. So I train with a lot of 20 and 30 year olds, some 40-year-olds, and I love it because I feel like it just kind of keeps me moving a little quicker or more quickly, if that makes sense. And so anyway, I just feel like that road training is beneficial to ultra running or ultra training. And so I try to keep that component mixed in with the trail running that I do.
So it almost sounds like you ran the Boston Marathon as a training run.
Exactly. Yes.
That's what it sounded like to me too.
Actually funny that you say that, because yeah, I do. In fact, that's interesting that you say that, because I guess that's right. It's woven into my, you know, preparation for my bigger distance races.
Yeah, which makes a lot of sense. So most of the ultras that you do are trail running.
Correct.
Okay. I would imagine that doing an ultra, particularly the longer ones, on the road would be really hard on your body after a while.
Oh, yes. Yes, exactly. I have friends that love running, you know, the road type ultras, or the ones that are flatter and that have the looped courses. That is not my jam. Like, I have no desire to do that. You know, running a marathon is enough for me. I don't need to go do, you know, 50 Ks and 50 mile road runs. That's not my forte. Mine is really getting out into the mountains and on the trails. And I love that. I love the elevation changes. I love the technical, being on a technical single track. All of that is why I run ultras, mountain ultras.
Great. If someone wanted to get into trail running, do you have any advice on how to get started?
I'd say just get out and start doing it. Just find trails, and just, you know, it's a sensory sport too, because your agility, your reaction time, your proprioception is being tested, your spatial awareness, because you're on an uneven surface, you've got obstacles, rocks, roots, tree branches that have fallen down. I mean, it's single track that can be technical or smooth. I mean, it's going to give you this sensory experience that you're not going to get on the road. And so you really just have to get out and just do it. And I always tell my athletes who I'm coaching, I'll say to them, go find as as much trail and as you know, sort of don't run the same trails all the time, go run different trails and get that experience, that sensory experience, because that's going to help you. And I think that's the first thing. And then you can start looking at how you're going to prepare for a specific event once you've become more comfortable with running on trails.
I would assume that you cross train. And if so, what do you do to cross train?
I have to be honest, I don't do as much cross training as I did in the past when I was a triathlete, because I was actually, I would run race triathlons, and then I was doing some trail running, but not competitive back then, not competitive trail running. So I don't spend any time on a bike anymore. I used to bike a lot, but I had a really bad mountain bike accident and I lost my fearless edge. And so I don't cycle anymore. I have a spin bike. My garage is converted into a small studio, like a fitness studio. So I have a spin bike. So I'll do some spinning. I really believe in functional strength training. That's what I focus on with my clients. And so I will work out with my clients. And so, you know, ball, band, you know, body bar, Bosu, I'll just take these, you know, pieces of equipment and I'll just do a small circuit.
Functional strength training?
Functional strength training.
And what does that mean?
So functional is essentially it's our bodies, you know, we've got joints and we're, you know, we have hips. It's essentially mobility. I guess that's a better way to put it. It's mobility training. I think mobility is now the buzzword. And so it's essentially using your own body's movement, natural movement patterns, taking a piece of equipment like a Bosu or a body bar or a band, and you're essentially just working your own body's natural mobility to keep your muscles firing and to bring flexibility and strength into the areas of the body without, you know, essentially using the standard equipment of like a dumbbell or going to a gym where you're going to use, you know, maybe some Nautilus equipment. Your own natural functional movement is what you're working with, essentially. And then you just have some other tool that is being used to sort of help build strength and flexibility into the body in a natural motion. That makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Do either of you do that? Do either of you train with these props? Actually,
sometimes I go to the gym and I do use the equipment there, but I do also sometimes I find the Bosu to be challenging, but I will use a big exercise ball or
stability ball.
Bands. So I do sort of a combination of those
weighted
things.
Balls. I like those.
Oh yeah, the med balls.
Med balls. That's what they're called.
Exactly. So all of that is great. So if you're taking a med ball and you're throwing it against a wall, or you're, you know, doing any sort of movement pattern where you're like, you know, holding the ball and doing lateral lunges with arm circles or something, that's all functional movement.
Okay. But lying on a bench and doing a bench press is not.
It is, but it's not the same. That's really more sort of like traditional strength training.
Right. I'm not saying you don't probably exercise the same muscles, but it's just not quite the same as what you're talking about.
Exactly.
You use the ropes. Do you have those ropes?
Yeah, battle ropes. Exactly. Yeah, I love battle ropes. Yep.
I can't say I like those.
I know. That's true. Yeah, exactly. Those are hard.
But they definitely work.
You know, I can't say. There's a lot of things I say. I'm not sure I like this, but.
Yeah.
The sliders. But you do it, right? You know, sliders that look so innocent. And then.
Exactly.
You know,
yeah. Or the sled. Do you have a sled?
Yes. I push that sled around.
Right. So what that does though, is that it allows your body to just move in all these different ways that you wouldn't necessarily be able to if you did more of the fixed, you know, traditional strength training. you know, where you have like a straight bar and you're doing, you know, bench presses, or that's fine too. I'm not going to criticize if somebody does that.
The difference between, and I don't know what, where squats fall in this, but if you're just doing squats with a sort of stationary, that you, it is a little different than if you go and push the sled, you know,
correct,
you throw a bunch of weight on the sled and then you push it however.
Exactly.
That's a challenge.
That's right. It is.
It certainly works your body.
I could see where that would really help with trail running too, because it's so, you don't know what's coming up next around the corner.
Exactly. I mean, if a tree comes down and you've got to go over the tree or under the tree, and if there's a, you know, enough space between the ground and the tree limb, which has happened here in Northern California, I'm sure there too, you know, we've had some different seasons where it's rained significantly and I live near trails. And so then I'll go out after a storm and it's, you know, the tree, the debris is just crazy. And I'll be on a single track and all of a sudden I'll just be like, oh my gosh, there's a tree down. It's like covering the trail. How am I going to get around this? And so I'm either going up and over or under, and then I've got to just go right back into my running, you know, but I'm dodging. I'm also potentially dodging rocks and roots as well. And so functional training or mobility training is really beneficial for that. And I just think in general for life.
Yeah. When the trail is very rough or you're going downhill or whatever, do you end up slowing down? Like, do you walk
no.
down things? You just,
oh no.
You're in it to
yeah.
win it, aren't you? You really
I'm in
pushing.
It to win it. I'm in it to win it. I'm just bombing. In fact, my friends, when I'll, you know, be out running with them, a lot of my friends will just, they're just like, you're crazy. Like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm just going. I'm just, you know, just going for it. I love downhill. That's one of my strengths, is the technical descents. And so depending on where those happen during a race, I'll know how much to let it go or how much to pull back. Just because I don't want to fry my legs either, you know? So if there's a substantial amount of climbing at the back end of the race, I want to make sure I save my legs. So if I overrun the first part and then I don't have anything left at the end, that's not going to help me out. So I have to consider that as well.
Yes. But you're not picking your way down a trail because it's rough and you don't.
Oh no.
Has some no. loose gravel or something.
No, no. And then that's where shoes come in, right? So the consideration of trail shoes and how supportive those shoes are and how much lug you have on the sole to support the type of terrain. So you have to consider that as well, because you want something that has a pretty hefty lug or tread to help manage anything that's going to be really technical or loose.
What is it about these endurance races, these trail races, that makes them special for you?
The landscape, just beautiful. It's just, I mean, I was in Tahoe over the weekend. I ran the Tahoe Rim Trail 56, and it actually turned out to be 58, but they said 56. So they added 2 bonus miles. And, you know, it's the landscape, just being able to get out in the middle of what feels like nowhere and see this gorgeous view of trails and just mountains, and just the sky opens up, and it's just beautiful. So that's really what I love about it.
Oh, the scenery. Well, you have a lot of top finishes, and there's probably more than what I have listed right here, but you have 3 100-mile wins at Tahoe Rim Trail 100, right?
Mm-hmm.
The USA Track and Field Female Masters National 50K Champion in 2016, the USA Track and Field Ultra Runner of the Year 2016 from the Pacific Association Mountain Ultra Division. This just blows my mind. I think, can you describe some of your experiences in finishing and actually winning some of the most challenging races, like these 100-mile and 50-mile, 50K events?
Yeah. Gosh, how can I describe that or the accomplishments? I mean, I think, you know, winning Tahoe Rim 100 3 times, and actually I also finished 2nd in 2021.
Wow.
Recently, so fairly recently. It's I love it. I mean, it, obviously it's well, I shouldn't say obviously, but as I said, when I show up at an event, I don't ever think about my age. I don't ever think about the reality that I'm racing women who are 20 to, you know, 20 plus years younger than me. In fact, this past weekend, I'll just touch on that for a bit. When I was out at Tahoe Rim, you know, running the 56 mile race, you know, I turned 56 4 days before. And so I thought, okay, well, I love this course. I'm familiar with it. I'm familiar with the organization that produces it every year. So I'm going to go celebrate my birthday by running the 56 mile event, and took a quick glance at the female athletes that were on the list. And as usual, I'm like, okay, well, there are a lot of 30-year-olds, you know, it looks, they look fast. And, but when I show up at the starting line of these events, and this event specifically, I just thought, you know what? I know how this works. Like, I've done this for so long. I mean, I've been doing it since 2005. And there's something to be said for experience and the wisdom, and the, I've matured a lot in the sport over the years. So I carry that with me. And with ultra running especially, that speaks volumes. So I just go into my, okay, Brie, you know how to do this. You know how this works. And then I really think about my training, you know, what I've put into this and how I've taken care of my body over the years. And I really believe our bodies are amazing. You know, if we're giving them the right food and the right care, our bodies will, they will respond to that. And we will be able to do things that ordinarily most people wouldn't even imagine doing at the age that, you know what I mean? Like at 56 years old, I often get asked, okay, you're 56. Like, how are you able to do this? And why do you do this? But I guess to answer your question, it's, it feels great. You know, when I win a 100-mile race, I'm elated. And like, for example, this 56-mile race that I took second overall and I won the masters division, and the female that finished ahead of me, I believe she beat me by 5 minutes, and she ran me down in the last 9 miles. So good for her, 32 years old. And the female who was third, I believe she's 34. And then here's me, 56, right in the middle. So, you know, it's, I just think it's cool.
Very cool.
That's great.
I'm happy.
We're talking about you winning the entire thing, not like, oh, I was first in my age group. You're
correct.
You're first,
yes,
first, or you're second in the whole race.
Second in the entire race overall. Yes.
Yeah. That's amazing.
And yeah. So it's just, I'm just like, okay, this is awesome. I'm going to keep doing this as long as I can, you know?
So I want to ask you about sleep. So like during the races, these are long things. So you're going without sleep. How does that affect you? I mean, how do you do that?
Well, I try to sleep as much as I can before. And then I know the night before I'm not going to sleep because your brain is just going, you know, you have to get up at 3 o'clock in the morning because the race starts at 5 a.m. Most 100-mile races start 5 a.m. And, you know, as much as I'd like to say that I go to bed at 7, I can't sleep at 7. I typically go to bed by 9 or 9:30. So, you know, I try to get to bed by 8 p.m. the night before a 100-mile event. But even then, I'm just lying there looking at the ceiling, you know, because I'm thinking about my event, and I'm thinking about, okay, you know, I've got to make sure I remember to go through this checkpoint and see my crew there and take this, or make sure I'm fueling with this, or, you know, there's just all these things I'm going through. I'm visualizing the course. So it's really hard for me to shut my brain off the night before an event. So that's why the week before, I sleep as much as I can. I don't rush out of bed. I force my body to just lie there or lay there for as long as possible. I mean, of course I still have to work and everything else, but so that's basically the preparation for the lack of sleep that I'm going to get once the race starts. And then once the race starts at 5 a.m., I'm just going, you know, again, I'm thinking this is a race, you know, I got to get this done. Let's go, you know, in and out. I got to, you know, show up at 5 a.m. and just go and get to the finish line as quickly as possible. And so I'm running through the night. There's no sleeping. Usually at night, I wake up, like I become this other person. You know, I recharge almost. I take my headlamp, I put it on, and I'm, you know, I get all excited about the fact that I get to run at night because it's beautiful. I mean, it's just gorgeous. You know, get to see the stars, and it's a whole different experience, sensory experience. And so it's almost like, you know, I recharge at night. I think the only race that I recall feeling really tired and feeling the lack of sleep was Wasatch 100. And that event, I was eighth woman overall. And that is a butt kicker mountain race in Utah. I think it has like 27 or 28,000 feet of gain for 100 miles.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. You're in the Wasatch mountain range, and it's adjacent to the Rocky Mountains. And I just remember after 25 hours, my pacer and I were running towards the finish line, and maybe it was 26 hours. I can't remember exactly. But anyway, the sun was starting to come up. You know, I'm always like hoping that I can get these races done in 24 hours or less. Well, this one went over that. And so the sun started to come up. You know, I saw the sun rise, and right as the sun was rising, I was running, and I just remember my eyes closing. And I'm running on the trail, and my eyes are starting to close. And the next thing you know, I'm running with my eyes closed, and I'm like, you know, my arms are still moving, my legs, and I'm falling asleep on the trail as I'm running with my eyes closed. And my pacer, Lauren, looks over at me, and she just like, she like punches me in the arm, and she's like, What are you doing? And her doing that, you know, it startled me, and I opened my eyes, and it was like a jolt of adrenaline just went through my body. And it just shocked me enough to say, okay, hello, like, I gotta wake up, you know, I gotta keep going here. I'm not done yet. And so that was the first time that I really felt that fatigue.
Do you think it had something to do with the sun coming up?
Oh yeah. I think having that, the light hit my eyes, it just woke me up.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like,
it told your body, hey, you've been running for a full day and night.
Exactly. Right. Anyway, it's awesome. I mean, I'm always very proud of myself, if I can say that without sounding arrogant, when I accomplish a win, like a hundred mile win,
yeah.
Or just top five overall of any event that I've competed in, I'm just elated.
I want to go back to what your friends ask you about how you keep yourself going. I just would sort of like if you could talk about how you keep yourself healthy. I mean, you're obviously demanding a lot from your body, and how do you keep it so it's functioning properly?
Well, nutrition is huge for me. I really try, as cliche as this sounds, to eat clean. I know a lot of people talk about that, you know, clean eating, but I really do. I don't obsess about it. I have times when I'll just say, whatever, I'm going to have a burger and fries, you know, or I'll have some ice cream, or I'll have whatever, a cookie or a slice of chocolate cake. But the majority of my nutrition profile is made up of whole foods, Greek yogurt, berries, you know, organics, greens, lean protein. I don't do anything obsessively, if that makes sense. So I often get asked about, do I subscribe to any diet? And I'd say no. It's clean eating. It's really trying to eat a little bit of everything in moderation. And I pay attention to hydration. You know, I drink my water. I think water is really important. And I try to eat a variety of vegetables. And I'm not a fan of pastas or breads or grain. So I don't have a lot of that in my diet. It's very, very rare that I'll eat any of those things. It's not that I'm trying to avoid heavy carbs or whatever. It has nothing to do with that. It's just that I'm Spanish Portuguese. I didn't grow up eating pasta. We didn't eat pasta in my household. You know, we didn't do SpaghettiOs or spaghetti or any of that. So I really just try to eat balanced meals, and I don't get into the timing of my eating. I eat when I'm hungry, and I usually eat with purpose, meaning if I know I have a big event coming up, I might eat a little more because my body is going to need the nutrients. And then if I've just come out of a heavy training cycle, or if I've just competed in an event where I know my body is void of something, then I will think about it. And then I will determine, okay, what do I need right now? Okay, I need protein. Okay, what kind of protein do I need? I need steak. Medium rare. You know what I mean? It's just, so I'm very intentional. I think that's probably the best way I can describe my eating is I'm a very intentional eater.
I wanted to ask you some questions about your mental attitude and how you handle all of that. Like, how do you keep your mind occupied during those long hours? I was always going to say long, lonely hours, but if you have a pacer, maybe it's not as lonely. But how do you keep your mind going during all those hours?
It's not a thing for me. It's not something like, I don't need music. I get asked a lot about that too. Like, do you have headphones when you're racing? In my opinion, I think people should train and race without headphones. I think let's level the playing field here. People, take away the headphones, because it's been proven that headphones help you run faster, you know, because people get into the cadence of the music and everything. So in my opinion, I think people may not like this when I say this, whoever listens to this podcast and maybe be like, oh my gosh. But I really think challenge yourself by taking out the headphones, because to me, that's a lot harder because you're not distracted. And when I'm racing, I really try to be in the moment. I try not to lose sight of what is happening with my body. I try to stay in tune with my body. I try to stay in tune with my thoughts, you know, because the longer the distance, the more important it is for you to stay connected, because you have to pay attention to nutrition. You have to pay attention to hydration. So I can't really zone out. So that's what I think about. So I think about how am I feeling right now? When's the next aid station coming up? So I'm thinking through the pieces of my race as they are happening in real time. So that's what's happening to me mentally. And then I'll have moments where I'll think about people in my life. You know, I'll have, you know, my father died last year. I lost him early last year. So for this race, the 56 mile race that I just did, I had a moment where I reflected on him. You know, he would always call me before or after an ultra and just, he wanted to hear about it. You know, he said, oh, you know, tell me the details. You know, how did it feel? And I was following you, and what happened? I feel like you slowed down a little bit right here, because he would track me, or he would have a family member track me. And then they would kind of go back and forth, you know, talking through what was going on, and he wanted to know the details. I missed that. And I'm going to get emotional. And so I think for this race, I thought about him, and I thought about my uncle Ralph, who I lost a few months ago in March. He was another big supporter of me. And so, you know, I just had some moments on the trail where I just had, you know, I was paying homage to them, reflecting on them. And so I'll think about that. I'll think about my life and the fact that I'm so blessed to be able to do this sport. So I'll have a moment of gratitude. And so I might have these just little moments of reflection paired with being in the moment of what it is my body needs at that time. And then once I pick up a pacer, it's like, it's party on the trails. You know, if I pick up a pacer, they're like, let's go, breathe. You know, and that just lends a whole nother dynamic of my race.
When you get a pacer, they join you at some point. They don't run the whole race with you.
No. For most ultras, you are allowed a pacer. I mean, you know, I'd say 100K and above. 50 mile, you really don't need a pacer, in my opinion. But 100K and above that, It's definitely a 100-mile race. I think a pacer is beneficial for safety reasons, and also a pacer can help you stay on track with your caloric needs. Usually about mile 50, 60 is when a pacer will come in for a 100-mile race. But prior to that, you know, you're on your own.
And so the goal of the pacer is to keep you moving, but also to help you pay attention to food, nutrition.
Yes. If you're having a low point,
waking you up if you're falling asleep.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And you know, you're going to have a low point when you hit 70, 80 miles. Generally, you're going to have a low point. You might have two low points, maybe at mile 50 and then at mile 70 or 80. It's very common. The pacer's job is to, again, keep you safe, make sure you don't go off trail, which can happen, remind you of your caloric need, and then to keep you going, you know, they become like a coach, you know, they're motivating you to keep moving forward. And then also to provide you with a reference in terms of, you know, where you are in the race, and to run ahead. And as you're going into an aid station, if you have crew there, a pacer's job, in my opinion, is to run ahead and tell the crew, hey, she's going to need this, this, and this. And that's how I really use my pacer, is to, you know, communicate between myself and my crew team so that they know ahead of time what I'm going to need. So it's just in and out, just like NASCAR, you know, it's a quick pit stop. I don't take a lot of time at aid stations. I really try to move through them rapidly and then just keep going.
I hadn't thought about that, but yeah, that's...
Yeah, I hadn't either. That makes a lot of sense.
So does everyone, or so you're obviously sort of elite level of doing this. Does anyone who does ultras have these kinds of, have a pacer, have a team?
I think so. I think to some degree, not everybody will use a pacer. I know there are some elites that prefer to run entirely on their own. They do have crew though. So that is standard.
Okay. So someone who's doing this, even if they're not the fastest runner, they'll still recruit family or friends or somebody to be their crew.
Yes.
During the race. Okay. Yes. That makes sense. I would think it'd be very hard to do 100 miles without any kind of support.
It is. Yes. I believe so. I've seen some runners attempt or actually do that. And I always say to them, if I have an opportunity to connect with them, I'll say, you know, it really is important to have somebody crew you for this event. It just, you know, to deal with drop bags on your own and have to, you know, ask for a drop bag or wait for a drop bag, and then you're, you know, sifting through stuff. It's just, it's to me, that would create too much anxiety. And I just, again, like to get in and out as quickly as possible. So if I have my crew there, they know what I need, they have it available for me, and I just take it and I keep moving. So I think it's huge.
Do they have porta potties at these aid stations? Where do you go to the bathroom?
They do. Yes. That's funny. Yes. Well, sometimes you have to just pull off trail and go behind a tree, but most of these events have some, like a porta potty.
I just all of a sudden thought of that. So you're out there for 24 hours, you're going somewhere.
Yeah. When I ran Wasatch 100 a few years ago, it was the first time that I experienced this. It was almost like a little tent. You know, I ran into this aid station, and Wasatch has pretty remote sections. And so I remember running into this aid station, and I had to use the restroom or bathroom. And I asked, where can I go to the bathroom? And the person like pointed over to this tree, and next to the tree, there was like this little tent. And with this opening. And so I thought, oh, this is so interesting. Like, it's a baby tent, you know? And so I went in, and there was like this makeshift toilet seat with a hole in the ground and, wow, you know, some toilet paper. Yes. And I thought, oh, this is different. I've never done this before.
Pretty primitive.
very primitive. And so that was the first time I'd used something like that. I actually thought it was kind of cool. So
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Otherwise you're just going out in the, in the woods.
All right. That was a off topic, I guess, sort of, but
it's okay. I get asked that a lot. Yeah, that's okay.
And weather, if weather's too hot, weather's too cold, rainy, snowy, whatever. How do you keep yourself going? How do you manage that? Does that affect your emotions, or are you out there saying, why am I here? Just how do you handle bad weather?
So I ran last year, I ran UTMB. It's called the Grindstone. It's in Virginia. I'd never raced in Virginia before. So I flew out with my crew to DC. We flew into DC and then drove to Virginia. And that was where the race was held. The day before the race, one of my friends said, don't be upset, but a storm is coming in. And I think it was like Tropical Storm Ophelia or something like that. And prior to any event, I'm always tracking weather because I want to know, is it going to be hot? Is it going to be cold? Is it going to be raining? Because you have to. That's a whole nother thing. You have to know how to pack. 100-mile race requires a lot of preparation and you just can't wing it. So when someone says to me, oh, I want to run 100 miles, I'm like, yeah, well, you just can't wing this. That distance is another level. So knowing this, if this wasn't a 100-mile race, but it was 100K, I didn't know the trails. I'd been tracking the weather and I saw that the weather looked great. Well, then the day before, my friend says to me, don't get upset, but a storm's coming in and we are in the pathway. Like it's going to hit and it's going to hit at this time. And I thought, oh no, this is not good because I had nothing. I mean, I always try to carry a Houdini or like a slicker, like a rain jacket. We call them Houdinis, by the way. So I brought a Houdini and I had, some arm warmers and sort of my standard kit. But, I guess mentally I wasn't quite prepared for a storm. And so sure enough, the race started and this weather shifted, like wind and rain and just, it was crazy. And I'm up on these mountains and on this technical single track. And I thought, okay, I'm going to die. I'm probably just going to die because this is crazy. Like, what the heck is happening? I'm going to be blown off this mountain. Of course, I really didn't think that was going to happen. But, you just have these moments where you're like, what is going on right now? Like, this is terrible. And so it's in those moments that I get upset. Of course, I'm like, I'm going to blow my race. I'm going to fall. I think I almost slid down the side of the trail and all this kind of stuff. But also, I've been doing this for such a long time that, you do develop a mental toughness and that kicks in, So then it becomes this, pull it together, girl, you got this. And I just start having these conversations with myself where I'm like, come on, and I'll just start saying that out loud. I'll say, come on, Bree, you know how this,
you're not letting a tropical storm defeat you.
I got this, and I just become my own cheerleader. And it's hysterical because if somebody saw me or heard me, they'd think I was nuts. But, I go into this whole other mode of like just fierceness and it's survival. I think we all as humans definitely have this innate, survivalist that comes out when we're in the middle of just chaos or, it's crisis.
Yeah. Yeah.
When you go into crisis mode, you're like, Jesus, I got to live. Like, and then I start thinking, I got to make it home. My husband, I'm a mom, I can't be dying out here in Virginia on this trail in this storm. This is not the way I'm going to, I'm going to leave this earth. And it's hysterical actually, but that's what happens.
Okay.
Yeah. You're your own cheerleader. That's for sure.
Yes.
Grab it up. Well, I'm thinking about fueling, when I imagine that fueling before during, after an ultra event is tricky. Can you give us an idea of how you manage your food intake? Do you rely on certain products or drinks, prepared gels or other food products? Can you tell us a little bit about it?
So I have tested over the years a number of products. I think I've tried just about everything. And if I haven't, I probably will at some point, just because I like to test things out. I'm always curious, because if an athlete that I'm working with comes to me and says, I'm using this, and I'm like, well, I'm not familiar with it. What does it look like? Like, what's the nutritional profile? I'm just curious. You know, I've studied nutrition for a long time, and I'm always reading, you know, I'm always consuming information. My husband's the same way. So we sort of nerd out when it comes to nutrition, and especially endurance performance. So to answer your question, I've figured out what works for me. And what I use is Vespa, which is it's not necessarily a new product, but I was talking to the president, Peter Defty, about it. And, you know, a lot of ultra runners, or even runners in general, endurance athletes, still don't quite know what Vespa is or what it does, even though it's been around for over 10 years. But I think it's a product that is definitely beneficial and can help with endurance. What it does, and I'll just tell you just briefly, is it's a like a liquid consistency. You take it before you run your endurance event. And it can be running. It can be a triathlon. And what it's designed to do is act as a catalyst to help your body burn fat and use that as its primary fuel source efficiently. Now, it also pairs with a type of nutritional food plan called optimal fat metabolism. So, or I guess to make it a little simpler, it's essentially training your body to be fat adaptive. So to use fat as fuel. And so there's this whole nutrition plan that it pairs well with. But the essence of this product is that it will help you metabolically become more efficient as using your body's using its own fat as fuel, as its primary fuel source, so that when you're running an ultra race or any endurance event, even a marathon, you're not burning through glycogen as rapidly. So that's essentially Vespa. So I take Vespa. I also use Honey Stinger waffles, and I use Honey Stinger gels. I think they've been around for a long time. I'm sure most people are familiar with that brand. And then the other is I use Salt Stick, which is electrolytes. They're in pill form. I love Salt Stick. They have their fast chews. So if I'm feeling void of electrolytes during a race, then I'm going to just pop a few of those or chew a few of those fast chews. And I'm going to get the sodium, the potassium, and the chloride that my body needs along, you know, I'll chase it with some water. And then the final thing that I'll use, which I love, is I started using Bunk Breaker. They have the bars, and then they have their protein bar, and then they also have their chews, Bunk Breaker energy chews. So that's it. And anything beyond that in terms of real food is avocados. I usually have an avocado or two on course. I slice it open, take out the pit, put a little bit of salt, and consume that. It's great. I'll consume bananas, soup. If the race, most races have soup available, especially as you go into the night. So broth is really good. Sodium, get some calories. You know, they'll often have, you know, something like chicken noodle soup, tomato soup, but I really try to keep it simple. I don't go crazy. I don't have my family bring me a smorgasbord of, you know, of sandwiches or whatever. You know, I see some runners do that, and I just have seen GI distress happen. And it's really unfortunate when it does. I've just learned over the years what works for me. And these are just some of the products that I've found that really settle well.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. Cause that's really a challenge, I think, fueling and making sure you don't end up with GI distress, or, and you don't you know, run out of all the different parts that you need.
I have not heard of Vespa. I have used the salt sticks, which I really like those, the chews. Those are, I like them, but I had not heard. So I will check that out.
Yeah, Vespa. Vespa Power Products.
And the honeycomb.
Mm-hmm. I like the waffles. You know, I mean, some people like the chews. The Honey Stinger has their chews too, but the waffles, I go back and forth between the waffles and the gels. You know, I try not to go crazy with the gels after a while. You know how it is. It's just like,
yeah, those gels are in your mouth. A little hard.
Yes.
The waffles are probably not as new, but they are newer. I remember when we were like seeing them, like, oh, look at this.
I know, like the Stroop waffle. Yes. Yeah. And the salted caramel. I love the salted caramel and I love the cinnamon. So Honey Stinger has both of those. Those are delicious.
Good to know. You talked briefly about nutrition, but your clients, people that you're coaching, what kind of a nutritional advice do you give them?
Depending on what I'm coaching them for, you know, so if it's general fitness, then depends on what their goals are, really. I mean, you know, if they want to lose a few pounds, lean out. I mean, I think it really is client dependent, you know, what their needs are. And it also depends on how much they want to unpack, because not everybody is necessarily interested in restructuring how they eat. It's very hard. You know, I have clients that have come to me and said, well, you know, I want to lose 20 pounds. How can I do that? And my response is, well, that's going to take time. You know, it took time for you to put that weight on, and it's going to take time for you to take that weight off. And ultimately, it's a lifestyle change. And so I really unpack the details of what they're looking for, you know, why do they have a goal to lose weight or implement some kind of nutritional component to their training or to their coaching. So I really try to get into a bit of psychology as well.
On your blog, you have a few posts about how to prepare to run a 5K, how to prepare to run an ultra, and how to prepare to run a mountain race. And I would guess that there are some common things about preparing to race, regardless of the distance. What might those be?
So I think it's, how important is it for you to train appropriately? Because I always ask my clients, my run clients, you know, if they say, well, I want to run a 5K or want to run a half marathon, I always say, okay, why? What do you want to get out of it? Is it, do you want to just finish? Do you want to be competitive? And so again, I always like to understand the source of the goal that they've established. Because the thing is it may sound good to someone, right? If somebody says to me, well, I want to run a 10K, and I'm like, okay, great. Do you know what that means? And they're like, I just want to run 6 miles. Okay, well, have you ever run 6 miles before? No, I've only run 3 miles ever. Okay, well, you're doubling that distance, and that's going to require this. And, you know, I help them understand. And so I think no matter what your goal is, no matter what your distance is, you always have to ask the why. Why do you want to do it? I think that's the common, for me, that's a common question. Because if they don't understand why they're doing it and they think it just sounds good and then they jump into a training cycle, they're not going to be committed to the process and they're not going to get what they hope to get out of it. So I think understanding why they've established that goal, no matter what it is, whether it's to run a mountain ultra, a road race, they need to get that worked out. You know, it can't be, oh, because my girlfriend's doing it and I think it sounds like a good idea. Well, that's great. Well, your girlfriend is a carbon copy of you. I mean, are you going to, do you know what I mean? It's like,
yes,
you just have to look at all that.
So you have to figure out what's going to make you get out of bed in the morning to go do your training run.
Exactly.
Yeah. Change your lifestyle a little bit out of your comfort zone.
Exactly. You know, because I've had someone hire me to train them for an event. And once we dive in, they call me and start saying to me, well, I don't have time to do that. Well, that's going to take too much time. And I say to them, well, that's what it's about. I mean, I guess it goes back to what did you think was going to happen here? You know what I mean?
Right.
Did you think someone was going to run it for you? I mean, it's like, I don't know. I guess I've been doing it for so long that I really think it's important to unpack that, ask that why question.
So your website, Live Well, Finish Strong, you have a slogan, I guess, everything is possible. And then you also have some different training packages for coaching. And so I want to go back to everything is possible, but also the packages I assume are available to people online. You do coach people.
I do remotely. Yes.
Remotely. Mm-hmm. Okay. And you want to just say anything about everything is possible, what that means?
Well, I think for me, I go back to, I think the bigger slogan, which is live well, finish strong. Like that's really my philosophy. That's like really the essence of my training philosophy. My mantra is, you know, you need to live well first and then finish strong. So no matter what it is you're doing, no matter if you're just, you know, training to be a fitter individual or you're training for a specific event, I always tell my clients, finish strong, you know, and then live well, because those are the things, in my opinion, that are going to get you the outcome that you're looking for. You know, those are the live well part is really important, because if you're not living well mentally, physically, you know, holistically, you're not going to be able to do much. You know, it's going to be difficult. And then the finish strong part is it's okay. Even if you're, you know, mid pack, end of backpack or whatever, just push to the end, you know, just like I think in anything that we're doing in life, just finish strong. Even if you're dead last, it's okay. I mean, you did it. It's great. And you should celebrate that. So that's what it's about.
Well, let's talk a little bit about sponsors. I saw on your website, you have some links to various products or things. And one I wanted to ask about was egg weights. I'm not exactly sure what they are. And can you tell me about them?
Yeah, sure. So egg weights is a manipulative, or it's a training tool that I helped. I'm a co-founder of Egg Weights.
Oh, wow.
So it's a handheld weight that is designed to, well, it can do a lot of different things. And actually, when I met the founder, the inventor, Christian Malcolm, oh gosh, in 2016, I believe is the year I met him. He lives in Southern California, but he sent me a prototype of an egg weight. And I, understanding, you know, functional movement and mobility training, I took hold of these little handheld weights, is really what they are. And they're sort of in the shape of an egg, which is why it made sense to call them egg weights. But when I held them, I thought, oh my gosh, this is incredible. Like this for running especially could be really beneficial. And so that's what I saw, but also for training in general, you know, the functional training component, you know, because some people, they don't want to hold a dumbbell, you know, after a while, if you're doing, you know, shoulder exercises or, you know, anything with upper body, to hold a dumbbell can be cumbersome, but to have a weight in the palm of your hand that literally fits in the palm of your hand, and, you know, go to the website, eggweights.com, and check it out. But it fits in the palm of your hand, and there's a sleeve over the top of this weight, and it has a loop, and you put your, you know, you thread your middle finger through the loop, and then they sit snugly in the palm of your hand. And then you can do all sorts of things. You know, you can do jumping jacks. And so you get that little bit of resistance. And again, it's a sensory, you know, you're getting sensorily stimulated, if that makes sense, but also neurologically, and you're getting that functional movement, you know, with shoulder work and so forth. So anyway, that was the idea behind the creation of Egg Weights. So Christian took this when I said, this makes all the sense in the world, and he's mass produced Egg Weights. I was very involved in the creation of the product and in the development of the business early on. Since before COVID, I sort of stepped back.
Interesting. I never heard of those before. So that was kind of interesting.
Yeah. And we have the running pod, and the running pod is specific to running. So it helps you understand where your arms are in relation to your lower body.
Oh, interesting.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And what's next for you? Near future or next year, later?
Yeah, well, I have August 17th is Tamalpa Headlands 50K. So I'm going to run that. That's in Marin County. And then in September, I'm going to compete at the UTMB Whistler. Right now, I'm not sure which distance, but it'll be either the 50K or the 70K. So that's Whistler, BC. So that's end of September. And then October, I'm thinking perhaps the Kodiak, UTMB Kodiak, and that's in Big Bear. And again, I'm not sure of the distance, but it's another ultra. It's also a UTMB event. And then there's a race that I mentioned earlier called the Quad Dipsy, and it's 28 miles and it has over 9,000 feet of gain. And it happens every November 30th, so after the Thanksgiving holiday, and that's in Marin County. And it's beautiful. It's on the Dipsy Trail, which is the oldest known trail running foot race in the nation. And so you run four times that trail, the Dipsy Trail. So you start in Mill Valley, and you go out to Stinson Beach and back, and then you do it again. It's pretty incredible. So that's my schedule. That's what I have coming up.
That's great. Well, if our listeners want to follow you, where should they go online?
They can follow me at Instagram, or on Instagram at Catch the Breeze. There's no E at the end. It's Catch, you know, just as it sounds, the Breeze, B-R-E-E-Z. And they can also follow me. I have a athlete page, Bree Lambert Sanders, or Bree Lambert. Bree Lambert, Live Well, Finish Strong, and that's on Facebook. And then I also have a personal page on Facebook, and that's Bree Lambert Sanders. So there's a couple of Facebook pages there.
And your website is
livewellfinishstrong.com.
Well, we really appreciate you being part of this podcast. You're an amazing guest, and my hat's off to you with all the stories that you were able to share with us about your ultras. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I really appreciate being asked to meet you both and to be a part of this podcast. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. And good luck on the races coming up.
Yes, so much. All right. We'll talk again soon. Bye-bye.
Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Wow, Bree really does some amazing things. It takes me a while to just wrap my head around running for 100K or 100 miles. It's so far out of my league. I have a tough time even picturing it, you know.
I know. So I've known people who do trail running, and they'll talk about like that they slow down and they pick their way down a hill, or, you know, go slowly at times because the trail's rough. And she didn't seem to think that was an option.
No, she's fearless. She's pretty darned amazing. And I really want to take a look at more of her website and really get a feel for how she does all that technical running and some crazy elevations too. It's just amazing to me. I like how she trains her athletes too with, you know, the functional mobility training using, you know, some of the natural pattern movements and some of the tools that she used. Just sounds like a great idea.
Yeah. So she used the Bosu ball.
Yep. Yeah. Bosu and the different weighted balls.
Right. Bands.
A lot of things that combine flexibility along with functional strength movements. I think so that when you have to jump over a tree or you catch your foot on a root, you can catch yourself, you know, the balance, and it's everything together, not just, you know, one thing. She really is pretty amazing.
You know, that BOSU ball, I was at my gym recently and there was a man, I'm going to say an old man. I mean, I would guess he was probably around 80. You know,
80 sounds old till you're almost there, right?
Yeah, well, but so I shouldn't say, all right. So there was a man who looked like he was about 80. You can use whatever adjective you want. At any rate, he was using a BOSU ball and mm-hmm. he had it so that the rounded part was down and he was standing on the flat part and he was practicing. He was standing on one leg.
Really? Now that's balance.
Balancing on the BOSU ball. I watched him and thought, I would never be able to do that. It was impressive.
Well, I'm sure that's not his first rodeo.
No, it's not. I'm sure. But when she was talking about the BOSU ball, it made me think of him because I was so impressed. You can do a lot of things with those BOSU balls.
Oh, yeah. I like them for planks, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, like you can do a regular plank either on your arms or your elbows, your hands, one arm up. But when you do it on a BOSU ball, you're kind, at least I am kind of struggling with my balance. So I can feel all these little muscles tightening up different ways.
Yeah, I've used those balance balls for planks. That's a challenge.
Oh, yeah. Like the medicine balls or the big giant.
No, the big round. Yeah, the like big round squishy balls.
Yeah. There's lots of ways of just kind of switch things up to keep it interesting and get stronger.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
It's cool.
And some of the things that you end up doing like that look easy.
Right.
And then you start
doing
them.
Once you can
them.
Do it. Yes.
Well, you look at it, you think, oh, that's not hard. But
right. That doesn't look so bad. Oh.
Yeah.
The next
there
day.
Goes my core for the next week.
Oh, that's fun.
So if you're listening, let Chris and me know if you have some thoughts on today's episode. Have you ever run an ultra? Do you have any thoughts about BOSU balls? Whatever we talked about today, just let us know and tell us about it.
Yes, you can leave us a message at becomingellie.com or you can find us as Becoming Ellie on Facebook, Instagram, X, formerly known as Twitter, Pinterest, YouTube, and LinkedIn.
And if you don't already belong, be sure to join our private Facebook group, Becoming Ellie.
Yes, it would be great to have you join us.
It was great talking with you today, Chris. I'm looking forward to our next episode of the Fit Strong Women Over 50 podcast.
I am too. See you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.